Dr. Charles, South Sudan is a land of confused, opaque, overlapping territories, unclear agendas, misleading titles, no man's land at times, between petty, squabbling empires. After a while, you get used to grandiose statements, theoretical systems like shadows that disappear when exposed to light, paper hierarchies, and muddle, always muddle, everything complicated, nothing simple. No question yielding a short answer. People defend their rights and stay quiet when asked to do something beyond their due, often taking the paths of least resistance, evading scrutiny in the obfuscation of local politics and interests. Accountability is a Western word, and sensitivity takes priority. Everyone has a secret weapon, some covert threat, and who protects you often matters more than any duty, moral or ethical. A land of civil war is a land above all of politics, ingrained, entrenched, and ensconced. That's why what happened today in a small nursing room, the staff room and intensive care unit combined at the hospital, stood out so boldly, so loudly. A fine example of a man putting aside any protocol, any politics, any pride to do his job to the best of his ability. No reward, no gratitude. Just his daily job. I was coming to the end of a Sunday morning review of my patients. I was due to retreat from the clamour and noise of the ward to the office to do some work, writing a report for a donor. I've come to realise that my sanity, my health, my longevity in this place depends upon my being honest with myself. An introvert needs his retreats, his focus, uninterrupted by the unpredictable demands of patients. I enjoy the demands of working in 45-degree heat amidst the multiple siren calls of sick children, and I relish the challenge of bringing a little order to the ward. But if I don't have my space to write, to think, to process, I would become lost here, swallowed by the jungle and the heat and the waves of humanity that knock at our door. Call me weak, call me selfish, call me Western, but I'm not a hero, and I realise that now. But today, as I looked to escape for a moment, a man arrived, pushing a woman in a wheelchair. He was doing this while simultaneously holding her head upright. She had the mask-like appearance of a dead body, sockets carved out, cheeks hollowed, mouth permanently open, gasping for breath. He looked tired, sweating, unkempt, an emotional shock to mirror her physical one. We brought her inside the nursing room and begun to get a little of the story. And it was a story that reminded you of the depth of hardship in the middle of this continent that has known so much hardship. They were from Congo, that vast mass of Congo bordering South Sudan, the country whose travails will always define the stereotype of desperate poor Africa, the weak and turbulent continent of our imaginations and nightmares. They had travelled for a few days to seek medical help, the woman apparently having grown weaker and frailer and thinner quite suddenly over the last few weeks. The language exchange was limited. My A-level French, I never imagined it would lead here. The schoolboy questions that seemed so preposterous when asked to a man and his dying wife. She'd been tested for HIV a few days earlier and was positive. We could only surmise how long she had been suffering from the illness, but likely it had progressed in the absence of testing and treatment to full-blown AIDS, arriving at our door pitifully late. What is it to assess, to examine a patient in this state? Her legs were the width of my arms, perhaps, my thin runner's arms. She was unconscious, but her eyes were wide open. A skeletal form of waste and emaciation that you might associate with the Second World War, not the year 2018. Her breath was agonal, the sound of dying, as she struggled to breathe and keep her own saliva from her lungs in vain. She likely had pneumonia, diarrhea, multiple invading armies, like her own country, picked apart from every side, some borders barely defended now by her weak immune system. I ran through this simple algorithm to manage a sick patient. Blood pressure unrecordable, temperature very low, heart rate bounding, breathing desperate, blood sugar low enough to kill on its own. Dehydrated beyond repair, probably. I can't conceive of how a person ends up like this, but still travels over a border. In my country, she'd have been in an intensive care bed a week earlier. She must have walked considerable distance whilst outwardly and inwardly dying. And quickly, to my surprise, with the help of a nurse, she stabilised a little. The fluid propped up her blood pressure. Antibiotics were given, sugar through the veins, a few simple tests that we have, nothing fancy. And there were the two other doctors assessing children with malaria, just metres away. The woman lay, gasping for breath. Her name, I noticed a little while later, Mercy. I was too shocked myself to cleverly consider the irony. But a little while after, our medical director, who'd been present but focused on sick children, came over in a break. Dr. Charles is a Ugandan-trained doctor who has worked over here for a year. He is a man on first impression of correct process, slightly guarded emotions, inscrutable on occasions. He wears a tie to work often. I sometimes wonder if some people might laugh at a man who comes to this charming but ramshackle hospital in a tie. What brings this man here? What brings a man who clearly has career ambitions to this place? To a land where his keen mind can settle on few investigations and results? To a land where he is reduced to humble auxiliary service? Then again, what brings anyone from the world of academic achievement, materialism and consumerism, and sharp dress sense to the edge of the jungle? And next to Dr. Charles, there I am standing, a man who professes his lack of fastidiousness, his lack of inhibition at life's grimier surfaces and grubbier moments, a man who takes pride in being hands-on, watching this patient, slightly recoiled by her state, the lingering smell of infection, of illness, of soon-to-be death. I've worked as a nursing auxiliary, I've washed the sick and the vulnerable, but I don't have the instinct at that moment. And Dr. Charles puts on a surgical gown over his shirt and tie and becomes a simple auxiliary. This man of correct form, dapper in photos often, proceeds single-handedly to undress her, to remove her heavily stained and soiled clothing. He is meticulous as he is in his own dress, in restoring a little dignity to this dying woman. He does so quickly yet gently, thoroughly, not tenderly, professionally, not impatiently. He genuinely wishes to bring order and decency. He catheterizes her, he cleans her. He laughs out loud at the dirty job, the lack of dignity at times in his own role. But this is not a joke to him. I realize that when something extraordinary happens, a woman and a boy appear at the window, a window with no shutter, and stare whilst he catheterizes. He picks up a half litre of saline he's been using and throws it at them. I marvel. I want to applaud. He missed. I suspect he meant to miss. But what a gesture. You compromise her dignity. I compromise yours. I stand by her, side by side. But it's not what he does that I respect here. This reminds me, I'm not a born clinical doctor. I don't have it in me to take action like this, and I'm past the point, as I sometimes reached as a medical student, of wishing to be the doctor who arrived in an emergency, to be the hero. I used to want it, like a child wants to be a footballer, a fantasy devoid of reality. My nature is different to his. I'm not an actor. I don't take pleasure in action and results like this. I don't walk home later wishing I'd done what he did. I know I'm a little diffident, standoffish by nature. I'm sensitive, intellectual, in my own world. I don't naturally jump into the fray, and that doesn't trouble me. No, I'll never do what he did today, but that's not a moral failing. It's his nature, not my own. Yet what I respect is his commitment to his chosen path. Medicine is his life. That means wearing a tie if necessary. It means living and breathing the job every day. It means in this country, in his country, a certain formality, a certain hierarchy. But it also means, when necessary, donning a pair of gloves and an apron and cleaning a dying woman. It's a commitment, a devotion that I find breathtaking. There's no opacity, no confusion, no thought of agendas, power, status in his actions. Dr. Charles in this moment showed his true colours, and he cast aside all pretense of being a superior. The senior clinician in the hospital, serving the lowliest. It's a beautiful reduction of a human to humble service. Let's take away the word hero with its misuse and myriad of connotations and just use service. I can both wonder at what he did, see the beauty in his actions, and hope that I can also find my path, my own committed and rocky path. And I can hope for the fortune and hardship of following my path through whatever difficult land and territory it takes me. Because the committed path only leads to one place, service.